Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to novelist Jess McConkie, whose first novel is Love Lies Bleeding. And Jess is not really Jess. She's actually established mystery writer and witchcraft writer, Shirley Damsgaard. All right, stick around. It'll all make sense in a day or two. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 900 archived celebrity and pop culture interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by Audible. Audible is offering Mr. Media listeners a free audiobook download and a 14-day trial offer to give you a chance to check out their very cool service. I love listening to books on tape. If you've never tried it before, actors or sometimes the authors themselves read to you. It's great for the commute, the beach, or even unwinding before bed. You can choose a free audiobook from Audible's enormous library of best-selling titles, including The Help by Catherine Stockett, A Stolen Life by J.C. Dugard, and Bossy Pants by Tina Fey. Here's an excerpt from Bossy Pants, read by the author, Tina Fey.
Because I am nothing if not an amazing businesswoman, I researched what kind of content makes for best-selling books. It turns out the answer is one-night stands, drug addictions, and recipes. Here, we are out of luck. But I can offer you lurid tales of anxiety and cowardice. Why is this audiobook called Bossy Pants? One, because the name Two and a Half Men was already taken. And two, because ever since I became an executive producer of 30 Rock, people have asked me, is it hard for you being the boss, and is it uncomfortable for you to be the person in charge? You know, in that same way they say, gosh, Mr. Trump, is it awkward for you to be the boss of all these people? I can't answer for Mr. Trump, but in my case, it is not.
You can also download The Profiler, written by famed criminal profiler Pat Brown and yours truly, which Pat will read to you personally. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of ambitious women with one straw poll foot in Iowa and another in Minnesota, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Love Lies Bleeding did not sound on the face of it like a novel I'd like to read. Believe it or not, I'm not especially drawn to stories of women in psychological torment and pain, which is how this story was presented to me. But I gave it a shot, and after about 75 pages, I knew I was in it for the duration. It was actually more a story of a mentally strong woman overcoming outside influences than battling her own inner demons. Now, that's not a spoiler either. Personally, I think this tale is more appealing if you know there's real character growth ahead and not just craziness. Now, I'd like to tell you something about the author, Jess McConkie, but she was a bit of a mystery to me going into this interview. Her official bio is just two sentences. Jess McConkie is an award-winning writer of short fiction. She lives in a small Iowa town and is currently working on her next novel. Now, that only told me that she may be in the witness protection plan. Then I found out the truth. Jess McConkie is the pen name of Shirley Damsgaard, who's already an established author, the creator of the Ophelia and Abby mystery series, which includes, of course, The Seventh Witch and The Witch's Grave. So here's what we'll do. I'll talk to Shirley as Jess in the first half of the interview, and then Shirley as Shirley after the break. Now, it's got to be less confusing than when I interviewed the dog who wrote those doggone-it mystery stories under the name of Spencer Quinn. So, Jess McConkie, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks, Mr. Media. Glad to be here today.
Glad to have you here, whoever you may be.
And yeah.
Your secret is, well, no longer safe. So, you know, Love Lies Bleeding, it seems to be one kind of a story to me as it starts, and then it kind of evolves, at least I thought, into something that was completely different and even more compelling, I thought, by the end.
Thank you.
Do you see it that way, or am I on the wrong track?
No, I write very organically. The characters have a tendency to take over the story, and that's pretty much what happened. I start out with a rough outline and then go from there, and that's pretty much what the characters do. So basically, the story is told the way Sam and Anne want to tell it, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Well, and it's funny because I was going to ask you, you know, some people start out with an ending, some people start with the beginning, you know, and they'll start with the end of the story and then they'll make everything work to it. And I wondered if the story like this, if you had started it from one place and then the characters kind of took over and took it to a different place.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I write. Somebody told me once that every story starts with one question, which is what if? And that's usually what starts in my mind. What if there was somebody who? And you can either go at it from an event, what if a thing happened to a person, what kind of person would this happen to, you know, yada, yada, yada. Or here's the character, what if they had these things happening in their life? What if they were this way? What if they were that way? What are some of the things that might happen to a person who had these personality characteristics?
Now, can you take a minute, and for folks who haven't read the book yet, describe the two main characters, Samantha and Anne? Samantha, I'll just say this. Samantha is she's a woman we meet first. She's a woman who may or may not have some real psychological issues. And then Anne is her nurse / caretaker PT person. So just that's the essence of it. What more can you tell us about them, and how did you see each of them?
Well, what started this whole thing, my late husband was in a coma. And we talked about, after he came out of the coma, we talked about what it was like for him. And he talked about he dreamt constantly. And I got to thinking, how awful would that be? Because when we have nightmares, we wake up. But when you're in a coma, there's no waking up. It was just continual looping dreams. Then I started thinking about with Samantha. I truly believe that we are a sum of our past. And though we don't like misfortune, oftentimes it's the misfortune working through it that gives us inner strength. So I got to thinking, what if there was a woman who had, you know, basically a golden life? Everything was just peachy keen. She had the perfect job, perfect man, perfect everything. What if something really, really traumatic happened to that woman? How would she deal with it? She'd never been tested before. She, you know, would she have the inner strength to deal with it? So that's how I came up with the character of Sam. And in a way, Sam is trapped by her desire to get her old life back. Then I came up with the character of Anne, who on the outside is the exact opposite of Sam. She's strong. She knows her own mind. She hasn't had a perfect life. She's had lived from paycheck to paycheck, raising her teenage son by herself. But in a way, Anne is trapped too. She has let her desire to see her son succeed trap her into a life. So in a way, both Sam and Anne are trapped. And they both have to learn through the progression of the story how to get outside of that trap. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. I have to tell you, I actually thought Anne was the more interesting character in the book.
Yeah, Anne was a fun character to write. Probably I am more like Anne than I am Sam. My life has not been perfect, Bob, at all. Not even remotely, you know. So, but I know that whatever I'm faced with, at least so far, you know, I can handle it. I'm going to figure a way out or figure a way around whatever. I'll do what I need to do in my life. I would say I'm a survivor. So I'm probably more like Anne than I am Samantha. So that's probably maybe why the character, I learned a long time ago, whether you intend to or not, bits and pieces of who you are come out in your characters. You may not know it when you're writing it, but people that know you will come back and say, that's just like you. So.
Now you dropped a big one on us a little earlier in the conversation. Now, Samantha has been in a coma in the story,
and
I didn't see this coming. You said that your husband had been in a coma, and I gather from what you also said, your husband has since passed.
Yes, he has.
Wow.
Yes, he has. He's been gone for about 10 years now.
Okay.
So, and his last name was McConkie, by the way. So that's where the McConkie came in.
Oh, well, of course, he was your husband, so of course you would be Jess McConkie.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
We'll come back to that later. But
okay.
Was it difficult then? See, now I had no idea of this before we started talking, but was it difficult to write about Samantha, knowing that you were taking some, you know, real bits of life, your husband's story, and using them here?
No, not really. Writers use everything. That, in fact, my children are going, I better not see that in a book someday, Mom. You know, I mean, it's just, you write what you know. But, you know, and for a long time, that held me back from writing. And then I realized that it wasn't what you know on the outside. I thought you had to have, like, a really exciting profession, like, you know, work for the CIA or be a lawyer or a doctor or something like that. But it's what you know on the inside that you write about. And that was a very traumatic time for me and my entire family. And if this book, if people learn something from it, or if it takes them away from some problems that they might be having, you know, gives them a bit of a respite from it, then that makes what we went through worthwhile. You know, something good is coming out of a really bad thing, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Did your family recognize your husband's story when they read this?
You want to know the truth? I have one kid that reads my books. The rest of them, no.
Really?
Really. They're just not, you know, I tried when they were little to encourage literacy in my household, but, you know, they just don't like to read. My oldest daughter has read all my books. Now, I do have a 9-year-old grandson who started reading a very dear friend of mine, Shirley's books. And he did say, he got to page about 25. And I said, so, how are you liking the story? And he goes, you know, Grandma, those words are awful little, because, you know, he's used to reading, you know, picture books, you know. So anyhow, he has his own copy, and hopefully someday, you know, he'll read it. But I've got 6 grandchildren, too, and 2 step-grandchildren. And, you know, I try and encourage all of them to read. But as far as I've got 4 children all together, 2 boys and 2 girls. And the only one that reads is my oldest daughter. So
I feel your pain, Jess. I feel your pain. I do nonfiction, and my wife, I think the last thing she read of mine, I think I'm on book 12, and I think the last one that she read was book number 2, and that's because she was copy editing behind me.
Oh.
And we found that was not a good way to continue a relationship, so we stopped that. I don't think she read anything. And I thought, well, you know, one day my daughter, who's now a teen, will be proud enough that she'll want to read. No, she has no interest in reading anything. So I feel your pain.
It just, you know, they say you're never appreciated at home, you know. So, and that's not to say, my kids are very proud of what I do, and they get a real kick. They do go into bookstores, you know, they buy other stuff besides books, but they do go into bookstores, and they get a real kick out of going over to the shelf and finding Mom's books, you know. So
that's funny. Now, I have to ask you about this. So now we know the origins of Samantha's coma and that type of thing. 2 questions, though, and this is at the beginning of the book, so I don't feel like I'm giving anything away. Samantha's in a coma because she was attacked
Right.
Does that have any basis in reality in your own life?
No, okay. No. Thank God. Thank God. And I wanted to, I took writing that part very, very seriously because there's a lot of women that does happen to. And I did not want to minimize it, to downplay it. I cannot imagine anything worse. And, you know, another thing that I've often thought about writing, I've not had anything that bad, well, like that, I should say, happen to me. But I've often thought that writers are like actors, only we act on the page and not the stage. And so when we're portraying things that happen to our characters, we do have to find things in our own life that have undermined our security, mm-hmm. which is what I think ultimately would happen to someone who is attacked. They would not feel safe anywhere. So, you know, you take something out of your life that has undermined your security without actually experiencing the event that your character did.
Now, there's the physical attack on Samantha in the book, but then following mm-hmm. it, there's kind of this mental attack on her by her own family, the men around her. And I wondered if you had any experience, you or anyone you knew, being kind of, I think I use the expression right, gaslighted, you know, where people are trying to convince you that you're crazy. They're going out of their way, and they don't believe you, and they don't think you're capable of thinking for yourself.
Actually, the movie Gaslight was inspiration for that. So,
thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I retire. Thank you very much.
Yes. Good. I did my job. You know, if that was the inspiration, and if you picked up on that, then good job, Jeff.
Cool. Yes, good job, Jess. The other thing I really took away from the book is this real lesson that at some point in our lives, no matter what else has happened to us, we have to make a decision to trust somebody.
Right.
Right? And that's to me, is one of the best moments in the book. And again, I'm not giving away an ending. I'm trying to be very careful here. Sometimes I won't even read the ending of a novel, so I don't take a chance on that. But very, very important turn of events here is when Samantha decides to put her trust in someone else.
Right.
And is that something that you saw coming when you sat down to write, or is that something where it just sort of organically developed?
It just sort of organically developed. I think in everybody's life, I've always been very, very fortunate. I've had close relationships with my family and with my friends, and but trust can be. I know after my husband died. Not so much trouble trusting in people, but trusting that things were going to work out. So you have to get to that point again, you know, recapture that trust. But as far as people, I've been really lucky. I've had a lot of people in my life that I can count on.
Well, I've got.
And I think it's necessary for anybody's life.
I agree. I think that women, now it's hard for me to say this because I'm obviously not a woman. Maybe you can't tell that from the shoulders up, but trust me,
yeah.
Beard, it's a dead giveaway.
It's a pretty giveaway, yeah.
I would think that that element of the story would be very touching and very moving for most women to read. It's just, to me, it was kind of the overwhelming element of the story was that relationship that developed and the trust issue, almost more than anything else.
Well, like I said, I've been very, very fortunate. I've had some very dear friends, and the friendships that I've had, I've been really lucky because they're with people that help you become a better person. And, you know, so to me, friendships with other women, my life would be sterile without them, without my girlfriends. So good. I'm glad I portrayed that well in the book, too.
Even for an old man like me. Yep. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And before we do, for those of you who are watching the video of this interview, I want to acknowledge we are aware that Jess has a really funky cameraman on her end. and who is trying all kinds of experimental stuff. So we're kind of looking at this as kind of like new wave video. So that's all I'm going to say about that. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to, and really hopefully watching, because we're getting quite a show on the other end of the screen, hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with novelist Jess McConkie, the author of Love Lies Bleeding. And we'll be right back.
Dr. Weir's mystery will be continued shortly. Say, by the way, Doctor, is mystery your sole pleasure?
Young man, what could be more pleasant than mystery?
Well, music, for instance.
Why, of course. Have you ever heard my clanking of chains?
Doctor, I'm afraid you've got me wrong. I mean the kind of music men hum or whistle when they feel on top of the world. And gentlemen, one of the many things that give you that tip-top feeling is the pleasure of being well-dressed. Perfect taste is a criterion, and in hats, there's nothing smarter than an Atom. From stem to stern, your Atom hat gives off that look of quality. You see quality in the carefully molded shape, and in the richness of the genuine all-fur felt, and in the subtle color shade. Next time you pass an Atom hat store or authorized dealer, stop in and try on an Atom. Once you see and wear an Atom hat, you'll agree that today, as before, Atom is one of America's outstanding hat values. Now, the good Dr. Weir.
Hello, this is novelist Michael Connelly, and you're listening to Mr. Media.
This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with novelist Jess McConkie, author of Love Lies Bleeding, who is actually writer Shirley Damsgaard, creator of the Ophelia and Abby mysteries. And not only have we secretly switched her coffee, we've secretly switched authors. So in this portion of the interview, I'm actually going to talk to Shirley as Shirley. And if anybody's confused, see me after the show. Shirley, let's just start there. I mean, tell me about the decision to write Love Lies Bleeding under a pen name. Why not be Shirley?
Well, actually, it was my editor's idea. And my agent gave me a heads up that they were thinking about asking me to use a pen name. And so when I talked to my editor, she asked me how I felt about that. And I had thought about it. And my response was, Emily, if you think it'll sell books, you can call me Puddin' Payne. I don't care. You know, I pretty much do whatever my editor and my agent recommend. You were talking to Jess about trust, and I have a lot of trust in both of those women. They've been hugely helpful. Well, I wouldn't have a career without them. Let's be honest. So anyhow, we were talking about it, and she said, "Well, this is a departure from Ophelia and Abby." And so, not to confuse the readers, she said, we were kind of thinking along the same lines as what we've done with Barbara Michael / Elizabeth Peters / Barbara Mertz. Okay, she mentioned me in the same name as my hero, so I was going to agree to anything she said, you know, in the same sentence, you know. So she said that they didn't want to get the readers confused.
But now your hero can't find you in the white pages.
Yeah. Like she's looking for me. Yeah, that would be, I don't know. I think I would, if I ever met Ms. Peters / Michael / Mertz, and I could talk to a stump pretty much most of the time. I would be totally tongue-tied. The woman has had such a stellar career that, and her books are, I read her as Barbara Michaels back in my 20s, you know, and loved the Amelia Peabody series. So that's kind of how it came about. And the funny thing was, she said, well, we place shelf placement, believe it or not, they think about this. And she said, we have another author that begins with the letter M, so we'd kind of like you to use the letter M. Well, my late husband's last name was McConkie. So I saw that, me being me, there's a reason I write about paranormal stuff, Bob. But me being me, took that as a sign. And I said, well, my, you know, John's last name was McConkie. And she went perfect. So therefore, that's how Jess McConkie was born.
And where did Jess, I have to ask, where did Jess come from in all this?
We talked back and forth. It wasn't any... she said, well, we could use Shirley McConkie. Well, that's too E-E, you know, Shirley McConkie. Then we talked about my middle name, which is Jean. Well, Jean, that was too hard sounding. So isn't this amazing that you go to this much problem, you know, thinking of an A? So anyhow, we thought Jess sounded soft. We needed some soft sounding name with McConkie because that's, you know, a hard sounding name. So anyhow, Jess popped up and that's what it became.
Takes me back 15 and a half years to my wife and I trying to figure out a name for our daughter and her explaining to me, that name is too hard, this one ends in a vowel, it becomes this and that, and it runs together. And we talked about aunt. I had a late aunt who had lived at like 99, and we talked about Annie Andelman. No, she didn't like that. And didn't Anna, no, Anna, you can't end on an ah and then go and. Oh, my God. Too confused.
Well, that's my youngest daughter. My mother's name was Rosie, and my late husband's mother's name was Annabelle. And so we wanted to somehow combine the two names, and the only thing we could think of was Roseanne. Well, the only thing I could think of was Roseanne Adana from Nine Lives. So, needless to say, she became Sarah Ann, and my mother didn't get a kid named after her. So, but that's the way it goes.
Well, it's better than being Rosanna Dana.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, for a girl from Iowa, you sure ask a lot of questions. sorry, could not resist. And let's talk. Okay, so we've got the Jess McConkie story settled now. Tell us a little bit about actually writing. How did you get started on writing? I understand you're actually, I don't know if you're still doing this, but had been at least a librarian.
No, actually, I was postmaster.
A postmaster, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Ophelia is a librarian.
I got that.
In the book. That's where you got it. Understandable confusion there. How did I get started writing? Obviously, Damsgaard is my maiden name, and which I kept after... I got married. I have that on the Damsgaard side of the family. There's a huge amount of creativity, huge amount. I had an aunt who started writing when she was 16 and didn't quit until she died at the age of 96. She never really got any book contracts. She did some self-publishing. She got some short stories published, that type of thing, but never really hit the big time, so to speak. But still, she was a great inspiration. And I always thought, well, wouldn't that be cool to write? And I've always been an avid reader. I don't know what I'd do without my books. They've gotten me through some very, very difficult times. So anyhow, I thought, you know, I'd really like to write someday. But I didn't think I knew anything. What we talked about earlier about write what you know, I didn't think I knew anything. I mean, I knew my life, you know, but who'd want to read about that? It was interesting to me, but not the general public. And that's when I discovered it's write what you know inside, not you write the internal, not the external. And so at the tender age of 48, I decided to give it a shot. And I bought a bunch of books about writing. There really is nothing, Bob, in my background that has prepared me for this career choice, nothing. A 30-year career with the post office, which, you know, I don't worry about the post office. So,
I don't know, you know.
And nobody wants to read it either, trust me.
I was a substitute rural mail carrier coming out of college in my first couple of years out of college. I think there's some amazing stories to be written about what goes on the mail route.
Yeah, there is, but people get kind of nervous when you start writing about that stuff.
Only mail carriers and folks like that would be interested. It's probably true.
Yeah. So, anyhow, I decided I'd give it a shot. So I bought a bunch of books, and one of the things that one of the books said was to go to conferences and writing workshops, that kind of thing. Well, lo and behold, there was a writing workshop here in Iowa. And it was out in Dubuque, and it was Synapy Writers Workshop. And the other thing that I learned through this was that they had, you could submit a short story to have it critiqued to a short story contest, and it would get a critique regardless of whether you won or not. Well, prior to this, trying mysteries, I had tried a romance novella. And to be perfectly honest with you, I couldn't write a sex scene to save my life. It, you know, I love Nora Roberts. I love Julia Quinn. Don't have a problem reading it. But when I write it and I read it back to myself, it sounds stupid. And the heroine in my romance was so dumb, I wanted to smack her up the side of the head. And I just, you know, hated it. So I thought, well, you know, I'm going to try this short story to see if I'm even on track with, if this is even a possibility. So I wrote a short story. It's called The Gift, and it was about a grandmother and granddaughter, and they were witches. And I submitted it, went to the conference, and not only did I receive a critique, but the story won first place.
Wow.
And as a result, I was invited to join a critique group out in Dubuque, and so I did, and one thing led to another, and that's how it all got started.
Wow. And you did this by writing about members of my own family. I didn't realize we were that...
You got some witches there, do you?
Well, I'm not saying. That's all I'm saying, and I'm not saying more. And by the way, I got to point out that I think there really are some great stories to be told in the casing of letter mail and, you know, wrapping your mail properly and you know,
mm-hmm.
using the old leather straps versus rubber bands, things like that. I think it's
Do you ever have a bundle bust on you?
Oh, yeah.
Out in the raft?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So, you see, folks, I mean, you know, all right, so maybe a couple of years from now we'll see that Shirley or Jess has written about the mail. I think that's, you know, I think that's something to look forward to.
Think there's potential there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll take your advisement, Bob.
Do you remember how you felt when you sold your first book?
Oh, it was, you know, I couldn't start dialing numbers fast enough. You know, it was, I was really lucky. I'm with Distel and Godrich Literary Management in New York.
You are?
And my,
So am I. Small world.
Are you really?
That's funny.
Your agent. Mine's Stacy Glick. Who do you have?
Michael and Jane.
Okay.
How funny. All
right.
What a small world. I didn't know that.
Yes,
all right,
yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
So anyhow, I was lucky enough to get accepted by Distel and Godrich. And actually, I remember when I got the phone call from Stacy, I was shopping in Walmart. And what I figured, because I did all this reading, and they said, well, you know, if you're a new writer, you know, yada, 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 probably small press, one book deal. That's what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. Stacy called me on my cell phone, and she said, we've got a three-book deal on the table from Avon. Are you interested?
No, I'm not. Hang up.
At that point, I started bawling, and the other shoppers in Walmart started moving their carts to the side. You know, this woman's having a meltdown, and she's going crazy. We don't want to be in range, you know. It was one of the best. And truthfully, this whole thing about writing, I hate deadlines. They make me... I learned a new way to spell anxiety. It's D-E-A-D-L-I-N-E. But the emails that I get from readers and just the pleasure of getting out there and meeting people and talking to people and doing things like this, talking to you. I mean, how we would have never have met otherwise, you know. And I've met all these interesting people. And it has been one of the most empowering things that's ever happened to me in my entire life. So it's been the ride of a lifetime. And if it ends tomorrow, I will consider myself lucky for having taken the journey, which we hope it doesn't,
No.
Which it's not going to because they're offering me another Jess McConkie contract.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. We're in the good, we haven't signed the contract yet, but it's a pretty for sure done deal. So.
Oh, that's great. I was going to... anticipating probably what would have been my last question, which was, I was going to ask you if there'd be more books under Jess, but I guess there will.
Yeah, there will. This next one's going to be a little bit tricky. It's going to, again, you know, I am more comfortable writing women characters. I admire women that can write strong male characters and write from a male perspective, but I just, that's not my strong suit at all. And so this is about two women, again, except one lives in the 1890s and one lives today, and how their lives parallel.
Interesting. And when will we see that, do you think?
I have no idea. I've got three chapters done. So only, you know, 37 more to go. So piece of cake, right?
37 more to go. Oh, man. Pain all the way through.
Yeah, and this book's going to take a lot of research. In fact, when I was doing the proposal, and you can appreciate this, you're writing nonfiction. I was writing the proposal, and in the first chapter takes place in the 1890s. And I had the character walk over to her Hoosier cabinet. And I don't know if you're familiar with those. They were real popular in the Midwest. They had flour bins, and they were kind of the first kind of kitchen counter, you know, thing with shelving above and a workspace where they made their bread and their and all that jazz. And if you can find one now in good shape, they're worth a lot of money. But anyhow, I had her walking over to her Hoosier cabinet. And then I got to thinking, when were Hoosier cabinets put into use? Looked it up on the internet. They didn't come into existence until 1900, 1902. So somebody would have caught that one, you know. So it's going to take a lot of research. So.
Wow.
And so I don't know exactly when it's going to be out.
Okay. I wanted to ask you a little bit about craft, too. Where do you do your writing, and do you have any rituals to get started? Or are you a good self-starter? Do you rise early? How do you get the work done?
Usually I get up about 4:30 in the morning, and this is really crazy. You want to hear how crazy this is? I like writing when it's dark outside.
No, that's not crazy.
And, well, you know, I was talking to a bunch of other authors one time at this conference, and we were talking about how we write, and I said, you know, I like it to be dark outside. Well, number one, because the house is quiet. The dogs haven't started in their morning ritual thing. And it's just something intimate about, you know, it's just you and your characters. So I like writing. I found that it doesn't work for me to write at night, because then when I went to go to bed, my characters aren't done talking yet. And they're telling me stuff, you know, and I'm trying to go to sleep, and it's like, would you guys shut up? You know, I need... need sleep. You know, I'm getting up at 4:30 tomorrow to write about it. But I like to write when it's dark. Lots and lots of copious amounts of coffee. That's the first thing that happens. And I like to write in sweats and a t-shirt with no shoes.
That's about as specific as I've ever had anyone be with me.
So I don't know. You know, I think a lot. You know, I ponder these things. And so anyhow, yeah, that's what writing has been a real learning experience. Besides just about the craft of writing, I've learned a tremendous amount about myself. It's caused me to question, you know, why I look at things the way I do, and little quirks in my personality have come to the forefront that I'd never thought about before. So they had flour bins, and they were kind of the first kind of kitchen counter, you know, thing with shelving above and a workspace where they made their bread and their and all that jazz. And if you can find one now in good shape, they're worth a lot of money. But anyhow, I had her walking over to her Hoosier cabinet, and then I got to thinking, when were Hoosier cabinets put into use? Looked it up on the internet. They didn't come into existence until 1900, 1902. So somebody would have caught that one, you know. So it's going to take a lot of research. So.
Wow.
And so I don't know exactly when it's going
to
be out.
Okay. I wanted to ask you a little bit about craft, too. Where do you do your writing, and do you have any rituals to get started? Or are you a good self-starter? Do you rise early? How do you get the work done?
Usually I get up about 4:30 in the morning. And this is really crazy. You want to hear how crazy this is? I like writing when it's dark outside.
No, that's not crazy.
I was talking to a bunch of other authors one time at this conference, and we were talking about how we write. And I said, I like it to be dark outside. Well, number one, because the house is quiet. Mm-hmm. The dogs haven't started in their morning ritual thing. And it's just something intimate about, it's just you and your characters. So I like writing. It doesn't work for me to write at night, because then when I go to bed, my characters aren't done talking yet. And they're telling me stuff, and I'm trying to go to sleep, and it's like, would you guys shut up? I need sleep. I'm getting up at 4:30 tomorrow to write about you. But I like to write when it's dark. Lots and lots of copious amounts of coffee. That's the first thing that happens. And I like to write in sweats and a t-shirt with no shoes.
That's about as specific as I've ever had anyone be with me.
So I don't know. I think a lot. I ponder these things. And that's what writing has been, a real learning experience. Besides just about the craft of writing, I've learned a tremendous amount about myself. It's caused me to question, why I look at things the way I do, and little quirks in my personality have come to the forefront that I'd never thought about before.
Last question, Shirley. Will we see a new book from Shirley before we see a new book from Jess?
You're going to see two things from Shirley. There's going to be a short story collection called Deadly Treats come out, I think, sometime next month. It'll be out in time for Halloween.
All right.
And it was edited by author Ann Fraser, who's one of my all-time favorites, and I contributed a short story there. Then also I have a short story collection coming out in ebook format, probably within the next 8 weeks or so. And then I have an idea for another book, which the way it's looking right now, it might be a young adult.
Cool. So no lost moments with you.
No. Got to keep writing,
Got it. All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find Jess McConkie's new novel, Love Lies Bleeding, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. And this woman, Shirley Damsgaard, she's got a whole bunch of books, too. You can order her books in the same way. and I know you're probably very confused as to how I did one interview with two different people and they both look alike, but figure it out, okay? Use your thing. Do you have a website, Twitter, Facebook, any of that kind of stuff?
Got Facebook, have a Shirley Damsgaard Facebook page, also Jess McConkie Facebook page. Also have a website, www.shirleydamsgaard.com, and also www.jessmcconkie.com. So, I never knew. I have a whole new appreciation for Clark Kent and Superman,
I hear you. It sounds like fun, as long as you wake up in the morning and you remember who you were the night before.
Exactly. Well, there's probably people in my life that would be saying, there's always been more than one Shirley, going around.
Now
at least one of them has a name, So.
And now there needs to be a book where it's an author with two names, and you figure that one out yourself.
That might be interesting. You've just given me an idea for a new story, Bob.
There you go. I'll have Jane give me 5 of her 15% for that.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
All right. So, folks, again, check out her stuff. You can order right now at MrMedia.com or great bookstores everywhere. Carry the books. And Jess McConkie and Shirley Damsgaard, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure. Have a good day, Bob.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Hey, folks. You can hear Mr. Media while on the go now with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone, whether you use an iPhone, iPod Touch, Android, BlackBerry Curve, or Palm Pre. And when you download Stitcher to hear Mr. Media today, you have a chance to win some real money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in your smartphone's app store. Download it. It's free. Takes seconds. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter Mr. Media, that's MR Media, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of Mr. Media will be waiting for you in Stitcher's favorites right on your phone. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. Some of my favorites include WTF with Marc Maron, Plus One Per Diem with Kevin Smith, and The Nerdist with Chris Hardwick. It's all free and all instant to you on Stitcher Smart Radio. And don't forget to win the money. Enter promo code Mr. Media, MR Media, when you register. And thanks for listening.
Hey, this is Amerika Olivo, and whenever I'm not being terrorized in the movies, such as Friday the 13th or Circle, or terrorizing others, like in Bitch Slap, I'm avoiding dirty old men like Mr. Media. And if you see him, you should too.